Yeah, do that.
Yeah. Hey guys, as you know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit. There are plenty of degenerate things you can do right now to make money. So make sure you check out rollbit.com and head over there and satisfy all your degenerate needs. As usual, we'll have two codes to give away on the show. The first code that we have is RectNinja699. RectNinja699. And there we go.
Oops, there is no code attached. Okay. Anyway, RectNinja699. Yeah, you, as you're saying, Solana just popped off. Seems very strong. Actually, in the pre-show, OSF just dipped. I don't know what happened to him. It wasn't the audio, right? You were the audio, Mike, Amanda?
Yeah, that was me on the audio.
Okay. Well, we lost OSF. Anyway, Sol's going ham. We got the ordinals going up. I know that's a Trevor's expertise. We got a lot of things going on.
Yeah, this is going to be more an ordinal show.
Yeah, it's going to be more an ordinal
show. Last week we had Solana. That was well-timed. We had the full pitch on Solana from Easy. And then that popped. And then the other main theme, it feels like, in the space right now is what's going on in ordinals. Trevor obviously hosts a regular ordinal show. It's kind of known as one of the, I don't know, ordinals OGs at this point. Obviously invested in a bunch of different companies in the space as well. So you felt like the perfect person to just kind of walk us through it again, because it feels as though it ebbed and flowed and then it's really picked up over the last month or two. So maybe like a refresh on, yeah, what we should be looking at, and yeah, a background on you as well. Like maybe a bit of an intro about what you've been doing in the ordinal space.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Really great to be here. You know, big fan of the show and big fan of all of you guys and what you've done in the space. And so for those who don't know me, my name is Trevor Owens. I'm a managing partner of the Bitcoin Frontier Fund. We're a very early stage investor, primarily in the Bitcoin space. We've had this thesis that Web3 is going to come to Bitcoin for 2 years now, more than 2 years. One of the first VCs in the space to take that, have that take. You know, we made a lot of our early investments in the Stacks ecosystem before Ordinals came along. They were like kind of a very early, you know, Ethereum has a very specific definition of an L2. I consider a Stacks an L2 for Bitcoin because you can't have, you know, there's no smart contracts on L1, so you can't have a ZK rollup bridge component, you know? And so, you know, Bitcoin is the largest liquidity base. It's the largest user base. It has a lot of trade-offs that I think make it better at some things than Ethereum, you know, and I think those properties make sense with its network effect that like what's going to be built on Ethereum and other networks is going to be Bitcoin. Like, that's kind of just like the basic idea. It's not a new idea. I mean, people have been saying this, and they've been honestly, people, a lot of maxis have taken this idea too far, I think, you know, with and why Bitcoin is in this position of having lagged behind during the past cycle. But we seemed like an obvious idea to us. You know, we're early in the market, and then Ordinals came along, and we were like, this is like what we've been looking for. And the reason why I made the decision to jump into Ordinals was because, you know, like a lot of times a bigger trend or a bigger thing can start out looking kind of silly. I mean, I think for most people, NFTs look kind of silly, right? Like and for people who are not in the space, and even for people in Bitcoin, but really an NFT is like the start of something. It's, you know, Chris Dixon says like the next big thing will start as a toy. There's like a famous blog post he wrote in, I believe, 2010 or 2011, that the next big thing will start as a toy. And for Ordinals, it had enough of like something compelling in terms of, you know, when I first got into NFTs, I went on OpenSea and I was like, okay, how do these things work? Oh, like the meta, like all of the pictures are off chain. They're on IPFS, a lot of them, or a lot of them are even on servers, and it's difficult to tell what you're buying. And it's very difficult to do on-chain art, right? That's fully on-chain. I mean, with OCM and several other projects, they, you know, do this complicated encoding to get the data on-chain, and Solidity contracts aren't really designed for that. And so Ordinals just looked like it was just like clearly solving a problem. You know, even if it's more expensive to put the data on-chain, it's like, I usually, like I invest in things that are high contrast. So, you know, you look at the blockchain trilemma and you have all these trade-offs. Like the right answer is like picking one of the corners, like picking the answers that have like the highest leverage trade-offs, which Bitcoin is one of those. It's slowest, but most decentralized. Now Solana is looking more attractive because it's on the opposite side of the corner. And I think that Ethereum is struggling a little bit with what the narrative is going to be in the next cycle, because it's somewhere in between. And also potentially figuring out what the next use cases are. Like if you were to ask me what Ethereum's narrative should be, it would be that we're the leader. That would be the simplest, you know, narrative, I think, for Ethereum. But Ordinals looked very compelling, right? Just as a, like for digital art, as a trader myself, as a collector, I noticed a lot of smart people in the space were getting into it. And then I think what it evolved into was actually much more of a paradigm shift, right? Like the whole concept of Ordinals was a narrative violation that you could build a meta protocol on top of Bitcoin, where it would be a separate node software that would be solid enough for significant amounts of capital to be put into it, right? Like the less decentralized something is, the riskier it is to put a ton of capital into it, right? And so that's why most people keep so much Bitcoin and they never move it and they keep it in cold storage, because they don't want to move, you know, they don't want to risk moving billions of dollars in different ways. And so, you know, Ordinals is an additional node software that basically indexes the arbitrary data. So you can put any data on Bitcoin in the SegWit portion of the transaction, and Taproot allowed us to open that up far more, so that we could put like way more data on Bitcoin than we thought than we could do in the OpperTurn. OpperTurn actually is interesting because it's going to be having the limitations on that. I don't know if we want to go into it, but anyway, before Ordinals,
maybe a little bit more advanced from where we are. Like maybe that's trying to explain Ordinals at a more like first principle.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. How is this more or less similar to the NFT space, which I think a lot of people are familiar with? And then maybe how is it similar to the ERC space, which again, people are perhaps more familiar with?
Yeah, so at a basic level, Ordinals are on-chain NFTs. They are NFTs without smart contracts. They're dumb, but on the benefit, they're simple. And everything is on-chain. There's no external dependencies. And so by being on Bitcoin, you know, there's this more, people believe that there's more of an assurance that it'll be around longer. And also by being on chain, it like kind of doubles that factor. And the fact that there has been no market on Bitcoin for NFTs before makes people think there's a ton of liquidity that could go into this, and that, you know, whatever the ratio is of the NFT market on Ethereum, the same ratio will exist on Bitcoin. And so that's like the most basic, like, hey, NFTs on Bitcoin are gonna work. The market is gonna grow. And they're cool, like fully on-chain NFTs, dead simple. There's some big benefits, or rather trade-offs, that give them different strengths than ERC-721. And the core thing of Ordinals is cool, but it kind of opened up a new paradigm of building on Bitcoin, which has led to a lot of developers building things like BRC20. BRC20 is not a part of Ordinals, but it uses Ordinals as a base protocol to make their own protocol. And we're seeing tons of like new kind of meta protocols on Bitcoin, and like surprise, these meta protocols are pretty solid from a development and from a investing standpoint.
So this is the one thing I've kind of noticed recently, is that Ordinals has started to look increasingly, it's brought in this utility element to it rather than just kind of memes and stuff on chain, like art, like you said. So what are the main, how is that really going to work? Are we going to start seeing smart contracts roll ups through this technology? That's one question. And the second question I would say is, what you mentioned before, like the limitations, like the amount of data that can come on. How exactly are we overcoming that, and why are we now able to put more complex things through the Ordinals network?
Yeah, so you won't see smart contracts on L1 Bitcoin. I don't think we'll see that. We don't have rollups on Bitcoin. We have various types of bridges, which, you know, I think Stax is probably one of the leading decentralized designs for bridges, which uses a collateral-based approach where people like stake the token on the sidechain, and then they that serves as collateral for people bridging back and forth, and they peg in, peg out, and anybody can join open membership. And so that's a pretty solid design, in my opinion. It's not like the same, you know, it's approaching, but it's not the same guarantees as a smart contract on Ethereum that services the bridge, right? And so the smart contracts are going to be on sidechains, on Bitcoin L2s, not going to be on the base layer. So you won't see things like, you know, staking a NFT for a token. And there may be other creative ways that people create tokens for their ecosystems, but you're not going to have custom logic around issuance, escrowing, or transferring tokens, because it's impossible. You know, most of the stuff we see in Ordinals is like trying to find that sweet spot of the 20-80 rule, right? Like Ordinals itself. It's like, you know, 20% of the functionality that ERC-721 offers is like just putting a picture and being able to trade it. And we kind of got that. And that's enough for 80%. And then adding to the fact some of the other benefits, you know, it works in different use cases.
So maybe that's a perfect summary. It does feel like it's going to be different, perhaps lacks functionality in certain aspects, but you know, you just never know. This could get progressively more crazy. And I've seen a lot of stuff from how they're going to start adding different layer twos to Bitcoin as well, where you could see more interest. Could we maybe go into, again, first, you're looking at Ordinals for the first time. What sort of things, what sort of marketplaces should you be looking at? What sort of wallets? Like where can people track this sort of stuff? And maybe we can also go into like BRC20 trading almost, because I know it's slightly different, at least on these, on like Unisat and all that sort of stuff. It doesn't really feel like people would, if you've interacted with Uniswap, it's not like that. It's different. So yeah, maybe we can go into how people can interact with this technology for the first time.
Yeah. So, I mean, when Ordinals started, like we had nothing, right? Like people were literally trading on spreadsheets and doing OTC deals, which for me made me actually super bullish, because I always believe that like the more friction that people are willing to go through, the stronger the demand. Now we have like, you know, basically approaching Ethereum level UX aside from the transaction times on Bitcoin L1. Magic Eden is the biggest marketplace for trading digital art. They also have the rare sats. Rare sats is a really cool, actually unique thing about Ordinals as well. Xverse wallet, I'm an investor in. Leather wallet is another popular one. The company that owns that is an LP in my fund. And then of course Unisat, which I can't say yet, but we also got something going on with them as well. From our funds perspective, and like any three of those wallets and Magic Eden. There's also Gamma, which is actually more of like less for trading, but more for like there's a huge artist community. So maybe you'd think of that more like FX Hash on Ordinals. It's pretty easy to use. I mean, honestly, like you get most of the stuff.
People are adding wallets. I saw Phantom got added today. I know OKX wallet is very popular because they have their own marketplace. And then, yeah, like you said, the Unisats wallet. It does feel as though the wallet technology is getting better.
Yeah, so do you guys have any Ordinals? I'm curious what your take is, you know, and what's maybe keeping you guys from getting into Ordinals, let's say, if you're not in already.
Yeah, I don't know. I am in. Are you in?
Yeah, I'm in. I bought some Bitcoin frogs and I've been buying BRC20s for a while, but it feels clunky, I would say. Still, it still doesn't feel great. Like you have to wait for transactions to be confirmed, and buying these coins is more akin to like buying an NFT. You don't buy some amount. It's not like a simple swap. You have to buy it from like a pool of coins at a particular price. It looks particularly weird. You're starting to see some of the major marketplaces now list these BRC20 coins, so that's a bit more seamless. Like the biggest ones, like Sats or Audi, which have moved onto the main exchanges. But it still feels a little bit clunky, and I wonder if, do you expect that to change, or do you think that's going to be with it forever? Like, is that just like, that's not going to be something that can be made any better?
Well, I think that the whole space is clunky, to be honest with you. Like, I think Ethereum is extremely clunky. MetaMask is extremely clunky. I think once you get used to it, you know, you just becomes like second nature. But I think the whole Web3 space is in like the AOL.com era right now of growth. It's like, you know, we haven't entered the Netscape or the Chrome era where things just become massively easy. But you know, things like transaction times, you know, are never going to change on Bitcoin. Things like transaction fees. I mean, that's part of the key benefit, is that you can run a node, you know, very easily. Like I have a node on my laptop that you see right here, you know, a Bitcoin node. It's also running the Ord protocol. And so, I mean, like, I think user experience will get better as people start to understand what the metaphors are that people think in. you know, I'm personally not necessarily too bullish on like Web 2.5, at least from an investing perspective. You know, maybe all the current market leaders are going to incrementally move towards Web 2.5. But yeah, I mean, it's gonna get better and better. But I think the time where you want to be in is when it's hard, right? Once it's easy, everybody's here. It's too late, right?
I think that's a very, very good point. And that's kind of why I like ordinals, like you said. When it's clunky, it normally means just outsized benefits. But I would say it was clunky 6 months ago, and that was also the case. I kind of thought it'd be a lot better by now, but it still feels kind of the same as it was. I know some of the bigger marketplaces are now supporting it, but at least the functionality of it still feels the same. I don't know, like OSF, KBM, why haven't you got involved? Like, I know OSF, you were like, I'm just not really too sure about Ordinals yet. And yeah, maybe you go into it a bit more.
I think conceptually it makes a ton of sense. Like, the idea of inscribing something onto a sat is so much different to the idea of an NFT and pointing to an IPFS link, and that's the NFT. Like, it conceptually, I think it's brilliant. And I think that's why when it first took off this year, everyone was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, the idea you can actually inscribe something, like, in someone's head who's like a complete normie who's visualizing it, they're probably thinking of a Bitcoin as like an actual coin, and they're probably thinking you can like literally scratch something on with a pin or something like that. And that's like what an ordinal is. And I think that's like quite a brilliant concept, and the way that it's described that way, I think is pretty amazing. I think there are some limitations. Obviously the file size is a big limitation. I think when we first looked through ordinals back in like wherever it was, like March, February, March, around then, maybe even April, when they really started to take off, it just felt like, yeah, you could buy something with like a very low inscription number, but a lot of the collections that came on were like, hey, this is like an ETH collection that we've just put onto ordinals. And there's like a lot of copy pasta stuff. And then obviously you had like Bitcoin Frogs, which was a real project. And since then there've been as much more art on it, if you like, that is legit. But I think when it first came out, it felt a bit like copy pasta ish. And to me, it was like, I've never really loved the idea of like, let me just buy something because it's old or because it's early. So, you know, that for me, that goes for like rare sats or early, like sats with like, old dates or, you know, like low inscription numbers. I think it has to be a combination of like historical and also cultural. So like, if there was like some good stuff with low inscription numbers, I think that would be very powerful. But I think that landscape is changing. Like, I've seen a lot of cool stuff come out in the last few months, and obviously the market is now, compared to like earlier this year when you just, I remember we were looking at ordinal punks or whatever they were, and it was just like a fucking Google's spreadsheet, and people just putting in their like IOIs and stuff. And then, you know, as soon as the market tanks, you get like 10 different people on Discord coming into you saying like, hey, do you still care like 4 BTC or whatever it was. Now that's changed because you have everything built and marketplaces and real stuff. But I think for me, it's definitely like, I just haven't found something that like, I love the concept and I think it's brilliant, but I haven't found something that I want to own as an ordinal yet. I think when I do, I would be like, you know, I would jump at the opportunity because I do love it as a concept. But also from like a creation standpoint, I'm like, you know, how do I, the file sizes that I create and do stuff on ETH in terms of NFTs are usually like, you know, they can be like 50, 60, 70 megabytes. So how do I create something that it can be like native to ordinals, but in an art style that's also still like you know, true to the stuff that I create, rather than just like, hey, I just created some pixel art, but I'm not really a pixel artist. Like, for me, that's like not a good use of ordinals because I haven't created something that's actually true to me as an artist. So I've been trying to figure that out as well. But it's something I'm thinking about like on a daily basis, I would say, like on both in terms of creating and collecting.
Yeah, that's great. I agree with some of the points you said. I would say that, you know, this is, I think, one of the benefits and one of the drawbacks, right? Like that you can actually inscribe files that are open-ended now through something called recursion, which allows you to like break it up into pieces and then put it back together in a new inscription. But the cost will wreck you, you know, like,
yeah.
It's so expensive, but I honestly think that this is a good thing because it forces ordinals to go in a different direction, and it forces it to maybe develop its own strength. You know what I mean? So I think like the small file size is part of the art with ordinals. And like the benefit of that is that in a way, like in 2021 cycle, like I kind of like first jumped into NFTs in I think around beginning of June or maybe end of May. And I was like, oh my God, like I'm like everything I mint is making money. Right. And then we like there was like this idea, like the supply of NFTs was not big enough on Ethereum for the demand. But then over the coming months, it went down from like 75% of mints were profitable to 50 to a third to 25 to 10 because the supply was kind of open-ended. Just like the only barrier was people didn't know how to write smart contracts. But with Bitcoin, there's a finite amount of block space. There's a maximum of there's a theoretical maximum of 210.2 gigabytes per year that you can add in Bitcoin blocks, assuming 144 blocks per day. And, you know, I just saw the new MacBook M3. It's like, it's an 8 terabyte hard drive, right? And so, you know, that level of scarcity, I think, is actually going to be really healthy for ordinals and why we will see a much smaller pool of like PFP collections, but also that those will be more relatively more stable over time.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think it's almost like Twitter, right? When Twitter first came out, you're limited to whatever it was, 120 characters or whatever it was. And everyone's like, oh, this sucks. But actually, you're right. There is an art in working with the canvas that you have and trying to produce something that is meaningful with a limited canvas. Like that in itself is an art, which I think is interesting. And I think I like the idea of using recursion to create stuff as well. Like I think that's something that could be interesting, interesting as well in terms of creating pieces and animated stuff that maybe is a bit more complex. But yeah, like I think more and more people will appreciate that kind of thing over time. I think it's easy to be like, it's easy to have the knee-jerk reaction, be like, ah, oh, this sucks. I can only have like 4 megabytes, whatever. But I say, okay, cool. But how do you create something good within 4 megabytes and make it meaningful? And I really think like for any creators or artists out there, I really feel like because there isn't, I mean, I haven't seen that many artists do something in ordinals. And I know some people have teased it and stuff. Like Xcopy tweeted out a teasing thing as well with like the Bitcoin logo. I think once people start doing it, it then becomes like a crowded landscape. Whereas right now you have an opportunity to create some, if you can like nail something with that canvas and small file size that it really truly is unique and a good piece of artwork, I think it can do really well because you're trying something right now in an environment that's far less crowded than, you know, ETH NFTs or whatever. So that kind of sort of the other way, look at it as well.
Yeah. I think for me, I was just lazy, unfortunately. It's from the friction you were talking about. And then, the IRL friction of like not having direct access to like Bitcoin I have and not like transacting with it too often, you know, it was obviously an oversight. And I guess Udi was somewhat right. And I can say that it's looking pretty good for ordinals. It's looking pretty bad for ETH stuff right now. But yeah, mine was definitely laziness, which is why like definitely lately I've been trying to like learn a lot more about things and different chains and how they interact with things, because it's clear there's a lot of money that's happening off ETH. And if you're lazy with everything, you're going to miss out on a lot of stuff. And also a lot of like potentially free money, like free, like airdrops, things of that nature. It's happening constantly right now. So I don't know if that's really happening it's happened on BRC20, I think too. I think one of our friends just did something, got some free BRC20s and they're worth like $20,000 today. So yeah, if you're listening, it might be a good time to get through that friction and try to figure out what's going on. Is there somewhere, like, where's the first place to start? Did we really cover that? The first place to start for somebody that's coming in?
I think it's kind of two different places. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like for the ordinals, you have the ordinal marketplaces, which are a bit more like the NFT marketplaces. And Magic Eden, I think, is the biggest. But then for the coins aspect, this BRC20 aspect, it's a bit more disparate. Some of them are on centralized exchanges. Some of them, I think Unisats is probably the biggest. OKX has got a market for it, but it's still a little bit, you need to work out where to find them. It's not as obvious. Am I right in saying that, Trevor? Or like, is there
100%. I mean, this is where I think like a lot of the opportunity lies, right? Because it is so hard to access the information. And, you know, it's just like what NFTs were on Ethereum and, you know, in May, in April of 2021, like it's like Discord groups, alpha groups, Twitter spaces, people are talking about it. You know, there's like things only show up in CoinMarketCap after they're listed on Binance, typically with the BRC20s. There's a couple different sites, but you know, I mean, Dune is a great one. Like if you look at Domo, the creator of BRC20 has a great dashboard on volume. Crypto Slam is a good one as well that people use a lot. But the tools are pretty young. I mean, you know, in addition to the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, I also have a tech company called Ninja Alerts where we do like wallet watching, portfolio tracking. So, you know, we have an Ordinals portfolio tracker. We're adding more things so you can like watch the mempool. This is actually going to be the interesting thing is that because the block times are so slow, a lot of the information is going to come directly from the mempool. And so you're not going to be watching like waiting for 10 minutes for a block to come in. You're going to be watching things that go directly into the mempool, which as we know, there's no one mempool. Like every node has a different mempool. And so
can you explain that slightly? Because I think it's not something that happens on NFTs, ETH NFTs. So maybe explain how that whole works.
Yeah. So if you've ever looked at like if you're participating in Mint in 2021 and like you go to Etherscan and you're like trying to watch like what's happening, they'll show you the pending transactions, right? And so that's basically like the Ethereum mempool. And on Bitcoin, like on Ethereum, it's like pretty quick, you know, like it's 12 second blocks. Typically, I think you use the mempool mainly in gas wars on Ethereum with those hot mints because you're like, you know, I want to see what other people are submitting their gas at. And you have like multiple, you know, like I have a quad setup. I also have had the G9, you know, Samsung G9 with like all the windows open. And
what a beautiful time.
In Bitcoin, you have 10 minutes to react to anything. And so you can like snipe transaction in the mempool. You can put in higher fees than other people. And there hasn't been any MEV on Bitcoin until now, but there's about to be a ton of MEV opportunities. Probably not like sandwich attacks like you see on Uniswap, because I don't think that someone will actually be able to make a DEX that would be solid enough or, you know, decentralized enough for people to want to put tons of capital into it. We have little like sniping opportunities. And so, you know, I think that like when a hot mint is going to happen on Bitcoin, it's probably done in one block. You know what I mean? Or it's going to max out the amount of data in that. And so the real place where, you know, we're starting to see like those professional shops come into Bitcoin for the first time, where they do have like a, you know, a crack dev team watching the mempool with custom scripts, front running people. It's about to get really fun on Ordinals, but you know, for the casual user, it's going to be a bit harder.
Yeah, it's something that you just have to get used to. It just takes a lot longer for transactions to go through. So, yeah, it's like you can get insta-sniped during the process, or you can be waiting around just to see if you actually got the asset that you wanted. It does add definitely some complexity to it all. Obviously, you're a big investor as well. You have like a big portfolio, as you said. And we've touched upon BRC20s, and the first BRC20s that I kind of looked at were all. They more were akin to memes. It was stuff where it was like, right, we're going to build a community around this, and it's going to be a meme because it's an early, you know, it's one of the early BRC20s, and that will be enough to propel it. And then increasingly, I'm seeing things like bridges come forward, and some slightly different tech, like this stuff like Track, which is kind of maybe a bit like a chain link. But could you maybe go into the stuff that we should maybe be looking at in this world, or what you see as like the big trends in BRC20s at the moment?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a lot of competing fungible token protocols. Like and BRC20 is the leader right now. Casey Rautemar, the creator of Ordinals, has his own that is going to be going live. He's going to announce like a block height activation, probably around the halving. But the code is on GitHub, it's live, and it's pretty compelling from a technical perspective. But BRC20 has a network effect. And you know, there's Taproot assets coming from the Lightning Network. And so right now it's like it's really, you know, the infrastructure phase. Like we're primarily investing in infrastructure, right? We're investing in bridges, we're investing in L2s, we're investing in wallets, we're investing in marketplaces. You're not gonna see anything new in Bitcoin for the next, you know, you're going to see the same use cases that you have on Ethereum, but just done the way that, you know, done it the way they have to be done on Bitcoin to try to be as decentralized as possible. So there'll be meaningful differences, but really, I mean, you know, I said at the beginning, like Ethereum is the leader here. And from an investment perspective, like the seat that I'm in as a VC, like I think this is the best job I could have ever got. Like just be able to see like, hey, you guys figured out an Ethereum. And I'm also an Ethereum builder, by the way. NinjaLarts, we support Ethereum. We were first on Ethereum. But like to just learn from what's done in Ethereum and then figure out how it gets done on Bitcoin and the use case already proven, man, like that's the best deal possible. I mean, the hardest part of innovation is always figuring out the use case, right? And I think that Ethereum is plateauing right now because innovation always happens with an S-curve. You know, you have a long tail period of like breaking through the plateau of research and development, of figuring out what use cases work, of 100 failures for one success. And then once people hone in on it, it's like, boom, overnight, you have like a cycle like in 2021. And then it matures. And that's where we are right now in Ethereum. And so, you know, I think it was, if for anyone who comes from like Silicon Valley, or, you know, you understand the innovation cycle, it's kind of predictable where Ethereum is right now. Like people are figuring out what's next. Is it going to be off-chain assets? Is it going to be, you know, like these kind of treasury funds and things like that? Is it going to be, you know, like what Goldfinch is doing, marketplaces where you can get, you know, real world yield? These are from very compelling things that I'm also very interested in, but you're not going to see any of these on Bitcoin, I think, anytime soon. The low hanging fruit is just too fresh and ready to be picked and plucked. And so most of the capital is going to go into, most venture capital goes into what is usually like low risk anyway, right? Like VCs are not, you know, VCs become investors because they couldn't cut it as a founder, right?
Yeah, it's a good point. Like, I feel some of the argument for Ordinals is not that necessarily it's going to be better functionality. It's just that it's a completely new ecosystem with now with obviously a ton of money behind it. And it's much easier to paint a, you know, a competitive story for something there. Can we just go into that slightly? So you said there's a lot of different competing standards at the moment for fungible tokens on Bitcoin. And Casey Rodemir, who's like the creator of Ordinals, he's obviously got his own new one. You said the tech was more compelling potentially for this new one. What exactly is that? Because I think that would be maybe not like a rug for the BRC 20 landscape, but how do you see that evolving?
Yeah, so I mean, I think when it comes to new technology, like the best product doesn't win. It's the good enough product with the most distribution. And it's not like BRC20 came out of left field. I mean, originally it was a total left curve play. That's why I faded it. I'm learning to, you know, not fade the left curve as much anymore, especially in this space, but it's new for me. So that's why I missed out on Ordi. You know, like Ordi was like a free mint and each mint is like 30 grand now. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of real gen wealth. Like there was one guy who literally had a schizo break because he minted so many Ordi and then like, so, you know, set up for life. Like you literally like, yeah, it's kind of funny. So, you know, BRC20 kind of came out of left field because like, I mean, what we're doing in Ordinals is that we are putting data on chain and then we're indexing it after the fact. And these indexers don't have a consensus model. They don't talk to each other. Right. But with Ordinals, the way it's structured is that even though that's the fact that you don't have to have like a proof of stake or proof of work to decide what the truth is, it's so low risk that it doesn't matter and that you can fit a lot of capital into it and you'd be fine. And that was the narrative violation that Ordinal started. ERC20 took that further. They're like, you know, we're going to put a meta protocol on top of meta protocol, which actually decreases the reliability of indexing. But so far it's been okay. I mean, the real challenge is that you will have different indexers that have different balances. Like for Ordinals, it doesn't mess up. Like it just changes your inscription number, but it doesn't change like your asset. For BRC20, it actually changes your balance. And what we saw was even recently, there was an event where OKX was using one indexer, BRC20 was using another indexer, and there was $100 million balance difference across these two indexers. I think it was on Binance's end. And people kind of consider like, there's like a little bit of social consensus around this. So people consider Unisat kind of like the de facto, since they're like the market leader. And, you know, I don't know how they filled the gap, but they just filled the gap and it was a non-issue. But with runes, it's much less likely to have that issue because BRC20 is essentially like when you're doing the indexing, you have to index every single inscription ever made to calculate a balance. And so you have to go through 50 million data points to calculate this. With runes,
wow, that's wild.
you know, and again, like that's beyond the limit of my tech knowledge as a developer. Like that goes into like, you know, a big enough company can probably solve that fairly easy. And Casey has said that he doesn't think that's a huge, huge problem. But like with runes, you can actually trace the transaction that you receive. You only have to trace it back like a few steps to calculate the balance. And so it goes from like being a 50, you know, a 50 million calculation problem, you know, indexing problem to a 10, you know, indexing problem. And from, you know, a terabyte of data to, you know, single digit kilobytes or less data. And what that enables with runes, it actually enables you to use your own light clients to validate your balance with the header data, right? And so it's clearly a superior technology. Like no one would disagree. The problem is BRC20 has way more momentum, way more capital, way more exchange integration. And so it's the classic battle of, hey, is runes a 10x? Is it 100x? Is it 1000x? You know, how do you define that? And is that enough to beat the network effect that BRC20 has? And is there enough capital going into BRC20 to make these problems insignificant, like as it gets better over time? And so,
were there earlier Ethereum fungible token standards than ERC20? Number 20 seems like quite an early ERC, so I just didn't know if like there had been competing. Do you know that? Maybe that's a weird question, but.
I don't know that. I don't know that myself, but I know I've seen a lot of variations. I mean, we saw what Frentech has a variation of ERC20 that they use. We see that there's an inscription. There's like BRC20s on Ethereum now that are actually called POW ERC20. I think we're entering a new game of how people think about even just smart contracts due to what people have seen on Ordinals. Like the fact that we've seen inscriptions on Ethereum, the first one, inscriptions on Arbitrum, on AVAX, on Solana, on Stax, like it kind of defies a lot of the conventional wisdom about what we think about the space, because and there's a lot of reasons. One is there's a free fair mint, you know. Another is that there's reduced complexity. It's easier, right? Like to put any arbitrary data on chain, you don't need a smart contract. It removes all that friction for people to launch it. And then for the degens, you know, they're all free fair mint launches. So you see massive transaction spikes. Arbitrum literally went down from the amount of inscriptions that they were doing for a little bit. And the people who run these blockchains like that, you know, like I can tell you because, you know, I made a lot of investments in the Stax ecosystem, Bitcoin L2, that people were stoked. Like people were like, you know, people are literally minting the Stax version of BRC20 using the memo field of the transaction. And they mine two of the largest blocks ever, you know, because it's free mint mechanic. Whereas typically when you have an ERC20, you don't even find out about it until there's a liquidity pool already. And then you have to investigate, like read the smart contract. You have to ask a friend, you know, there's a lot of like trust assumptions that go in just having a smart contract that are gone that you don't have to worry about with these like dumb protocols, so to speak.
Let's, I'd be curious to, I know we've just chatted a lot so far about Ordinals and stuff, but I'd be curious to find out a bit more about you, Trevor. Like how did you first get into crypto? Like what was it? Presumably it was you started at Bitcoin, but what was it that got you in? And then what was your kind of like evolution through all the different areas of crypto, et cetera, over the years?
Yeah, so I mean, I bought Bitcoin in 2013. Initially, but I stayed pretty clear of the space, to be honest with you. I tend to be like my specialty is like I'm a developer and also in go to market and marketing. And so I don't really like to do like deep tech or hard tech type of stuff. And so in 2013, it was like, all right, this is hopes and dreams and kind of thing in the whole space and really cool. But, you know, why don't you just use an SQL database, right? It was like kind of the feeling I had. So I held some Bitcoin and I stayed in Web2 until 2021. And so, you know, I kept track of the space. Wow. I actually have known the founders of Stax since 2013. One of the co-founders, Ryan Shea, gave me my first Bitcoin. he's the one who had read it, you know, had read all the code in Bitcoin and like taught me everything about it, but I still wasn't convinced. The 2017 cycle made me want to, you know, get even further away from the space because it just like seemed ridiculous that people are raising, you know, the funds that they're raising without having a product. And, you know, I've been in that stuff in Silicon Valley. Like I've been in that stuff, you know, in this like, you know, Web 2 since 2010, seeing these companies raise money at ridiculous valuations and all of them fail, you know, and some of them failed just because they raised so much money. And so I stayed clear from the ICO phase. I actually went to school with Sergey, who founded Chainlink. I have an email from him being like, "Hey, we're doing this thing, and can you give me some feedback on my pitch deck." Like when I searched in my inbox, I was like, "Oh man, like this is the big I ever made," you know. Yeah, 2021, like I saw MetaMask, I saw OpenSea, I saw Uniswap, and I was like, "We've done it." I was like, "We've done it." Like this is clearly materially a leap forward compared to Web 2. And so, you know, I went from like, you know, I saw the markets were pumping again first. And I was like, Bitcoin's gonna, you know, this stuff is gonna go to zero probably, you know, but I'm still holding anyway, you know, just because I always gotta hedge my bets here. In the span of a couple of weeks, I went from being like totally anti to all in, just because I saw the actual applications that people had built that you couldn't replicate in Web 2 and that the traction and adoption was growing. So
and you mentioned, you talked about ETH earlier and how it's in this difficult situation. And I agree with you. Like I wouldn't say I've been an ETH maxi, but I've definitely been like very much in the ETH ecosystem for a long time. But now like exploring stuff with Solana, looking at what Bitcoin's got going on and everything, it does feel like it's in this like difficult, not a difficult part of technology, but a difficult part of its life cycle compared to other chains, if you like. That's the way I view it. 100%. But what in your opinion needs to happen on ETH right now or next year for it to come back into vogue, or get back the interest, not even just like the price action, but just the interest that it had a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think it'll have to be like the L2 ecosystem on ETH starts to consolidate. You know, even in 2021, like there was a time when OpenSea and Blur didn't even exist, but OpenSea wasn't the market leader, and there were a ton of different marketplaces. We saw the same thing on Solana for a while, but then eventually consolidated. And so I think the fragmentation in L2s right now is kind of holding Ethereum back. And also the fact that, I mean, you look at these L2s, and they're basically like on $1 billion or $2 billion valuation, and they're less valuable than OpenSea. And so you have this dynamic where the L1 application players are more powerful than the L2s, and you have this kind of standoff where it's just causing a lot of these application leaders. And so I think the fragmentation needs to consolidate, which will happen over time. I'm a big believer in the layered approach, actually. And like kind of seeing Solana like go up a lot makes a lot of sense to me, but it also, I didn't think we would maybe even see it. Like I thought the L2 ecosystem would kind of solve itself, but definitely some growing pains in terms of fragmentation. And then I think that ETH needs to just continue to lead. Right? Like I think that the ecosystem needs to continue to push new use cases. If I was a builder on ETH, I would be 100% focused on new stuff, things that haven't been done before. If I was a VC focused on ETH, I would be focused on figuring out what those new use cases are. It's a hard job to do, right? Yeah. And not everybody can do it. But we're starting to see some of those use cases, you know, like creating yield in the real world being a big one, and putting that on ETH. Like I think that Ponzi-nomics are not going to go away, but the faster they go away, ETH is going to be a lot better off. ETH is going to be the first person who, like, Bitcoin, we're going to have a ton of Ponzi-nomics. Like, there's going to be a ton of founders and ordinals, I tweeted this out last night, who are going to ruin their companies because they rush out doing a token, copying the same Ponzi games that we had before. Yeah. And, you know, while we've learned from those games, they're still going to work, but Ethereum has the opportunity to actually push the whole space forward. And that's kind of like what I'm excited about. And so I think Web3 gaming is going to be big. I think there's going to be a tight competition between Ethereum and Solana on that front. So I'm more interested when it comes to more novel use cases on Ethereum, like off-chain assets and off-chain yield.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I do agree, like the L2, first you had the L2 technology come in and people were like, wow, this is a game changer for ETH. And then you just had like a ton of L2s across the board. It's like, okay, like how many of these do we really need? And is this just like people realizing there's a Ponzi to be created out of something and monetizing it and moving on to the next one? And it's difficult to, I think, distinguish between the two sometimes. And that's probably true for all of crypto. Sometimes it's like, is this thing really viable, or is it just like a Ponzi people want to monetize? Sometimes you're never really sure. But yeah, I agree. I think the other thing ETH has going for it, maybe compared to Solana next year, will be the ETF stuff as well. And that's been like a massive tailwind for Bitcoin this year, and hopefully we see that approval in the next couple of weeks or so. But then, you know, the next one is ETH, and you have the big guys like BlackRock and Fidelity, etc., wanting to get involved in that game. And I would imagine that brings more funding into that ecosystem and maybe allows them to solve some of the problems they've had. I'm not really sure, but just part of me thinks like next year we see that narrative shift and change a little bit again next year. But I don't know, who knows, we'll see. It's difficult to judge these things in the space for sure. Go ahead.
With the election cycle coming up, I think everybody's gonna do well. You know, like this next year, fiat's gonna be worse off. The whole crypto space is gonna be better off. But you know, long term, what's gonna get us there are the real applications people build.
For sure, yeah. For sure. No, it's been great. I think I'm pretty ordinals pilled. I think I'm gonna log on later and try to mess with it. And with that in mind, like, what would you say before we close down here? Like, what was the 3-step process for me later? What's it going to look like? I'm going to write this down right now. How am I getting involved?
Yeah, download X First Wall, and I'm going to plug them since they're a portfolio company of mine that I'm public about. You know,
what is it called?
Xverse.
Okay.
And then put some Bitcoin in it.
Okay.
And then go to Magic Eden, go to Unisat, probably do some research, you know, but I mean,
all right, I'll do research.
No research.
This is my research. What do you mean? I just did it. That was a lot of DD right there. I'm just trusting him on this Xverse. I mean, I'm just making some leaks of faith.
On the trades, you know, like, but I mean, there's a fairly small pool of blue chip projects on Ordinals. I mean, like altogether, there's probably 30K PFPs total, you know, that are notable or less, right? I mean. And so, you know, depends on what your trading strategy is. KBM, are you like more of a long-term holder? Are you looking?
I'm going to go pretty short-term here. I've been known to do not the long-term, the polar opposite. So I think we'll keep it like that. But I mean, like, I'm not going to start with a huge balance. I'm trying to like, can you start with light balances? I'm sure people are wondering that as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can start with, I mean, I personally don't mess with stuff. Like, I try to look around the, like just under 0.01, so like 0.00, you know, two to nine range. I don't think you want to go 3 zeros. You want to kind of stick.
Yeah, we don't want to get down that dirty in the sats.
Yeah,
we don't want to go that deep.
Yeah, and you're looking for stuff that's gonna go from like, you know, that around 0.01 to 0.1 yep. range, and you know, probably one thing you want to do differently than you do in Ethereum and Bitcoin is you want to pay attention to the Asian market. So. Okay. You know, there's a, like, I would say 70% or more of ERC-20 volume is coming from Asia. And a lot of these collectors are now tuning into the PFP projects in a way they haven't done it on Ethereum. And so, like, Bitcoin Frogs, you know, that has been a crazy run. And that's been primarily driven by the Asia community because it's a meme that works not only in the West, but also in Asia. And so,
let me write that down, change sleep schedule.
Yeah.
We got a good list here. This is solid. Xverse, guys, put some Bitcoin, Magic Eden, Unisat, change sleep schedule, and you will be printing money in no time, not financial advice. So let's get these closing questions. We got one question, then we're going to do some duels. We might run over the time here. That's fine. But how do you not get wrecked in this market, Trevor?
Oh, man. I think, you know, I like to follow the rule of thirds in trading. You know what I'm saying? It's like when you take a position, you know, exit a third of it, recover your principal, kind of a thing, and then, you know, ladder up. I think it's all about just practicing, risk mitigation, right? Not something I did as well as I wish I did in the 2022, you know, but second time's the charm, you know. So,
yep, same. And luckily, this industry seems to keep giving people chances as long as you don't take yourself out of the game. So I think that's a good idea there: mitigate your risk and never go all in, so you're never all out. Let's get these duels going. Trevor, stick around. We're going to log on Rollbit, give away a bunch of free money to people.